My name's Greg Roth, and so this month, 41 years ago, I was living on the east side of Columbus, and my friend that I was hanging out with, we were partying one night, and after he left my apartment, he was shot and killed just a couple blocks from where I lived. And then about a week later, a classmate of mine offered to help console me by coming over and getting high and brought some LSD. I'd never taken LSD before, and so instead of getting high, I had a bad trip and hallucinated that the devil was coming for my soul. Needless to say, my evening was a long one. Most of the time I spent bargaining and pleading with God. And nonetheless, eventually the drugs wore off and I kind of forgot about everything. And it did kind of mess up my life for a while. I was in a psychiatric ward for a couple weeks because of that, and had flashbacks and heard voices for a year or so. But fast forward a couple years after that, I thought I had got, you know, my life back together somewhat. I was in a career and starting to date and, you know, look for a wife, but still didn't have very much wisdom about how to live life or any direction or meaning. And so found myself in a hospital bed at Riverside, paralyzed from the waist down because of a vehicle accident. I had stayed out pretty much all night and going to bars, and on the way home collided with another car. One person was killed, another guy was severely injured, and I was, you know, my life was changed forever. The head surgeon who worked on me and was overseeing my recovery, probably a couple weeks after, said to me, he said in so many words that I shouldn't have survived with the injuries I sustained. I had a broken neck and back and some other kinds of a lot of glass stuck in my left side here. But and I knew, I think that kind of clued me in that maybe God had been involved. But I didn't know. I didn't have any kind of personal relationship with him at that point. Little did I know that there was this thing called Fish House Fellowship that he was working through, getting started on campus. And so fast forward a year after my accident, and I was back into living into an apartment and kind of again, starting to get into a party lifestyle. But some people in that apartment complex, a girl had just accepted Christ in a home group that was in the fish house, and she lived in an apartment complex, and she invited me to a softball game. And I never would have accepted an invitation to a Christian, you know. I thought Christians were too radical and weird. So I never would have accepted before that point in my life. But because of, you know, God softening my heart through life circumstances, I was open, and I went, and it was one of the most wonderful experiences I think I had probably for several years. People, you know, showed genuine concern, and I was still skeptical, though. I kept going back. I went to Central Teachings, heard Dennis, and of course, I was in a home group with his mom, Martha. She came up to me after a teaching one night and said, "So, Greg, don't you think it's about time you accepted Christ?" and I didn't really know what that meant at the time, but probably about a couple months later, I took God at His word, and through some other circumstances that kind of pushed me, gave me a nudge to make that decision, and I just did it at my apartment, I think, and later got baptized, and that was quite an event. I think there was several hundred people there. But since that time, for one thing that had a big impact on me and changed some of my ideas about living from a wheelchair was reading Johnny Erickson's book. And we're going to talk some more about some of the misconceptions that she helped me understand. And so over the years, God's led me through different types of ministry, and He sent people who discipled me, and eventually He helped our church start this disability ministry we call Access. And got a picture there. And we've had a lot of people come to that, and it's just amazing what God can do when you put your life in His hands. And with that, I'll toss it over here to Molly.
Like Greg said, I'm Molly Martin, and clearly from looking at us, we have different life experiences in terms of the illnesses and disability and pain that we go through. So I'll share a little bit of my story. So I experienced chronic migraines, I have Crohn's disease, and I have what's called vasculitis, and specifically affects my aorta, which gets inflamed. So this picture here on the left is me I learned how to use this thing. That right there is me when I was 9, which is when I first started experiencing symptoms of Crohn's. And because I looked pretty fine and was just a young girl, a lot of doctors thought that I was just faking it, that I was just stressed, that I was anorexic or bulimic. And so it took several years for a doctor to take us seriously and I finally got diagnosed. And I couldn't find a picture of my first colonoscopy, but 2009 was probably six colonoscopies later, so age 15. I get them every year, so if you got your first one at 50, you're lucky. And yeah, so I started getting infusions of Remicade every 6 weeks. I went on steroids, high-dose steroids at age 10 or 11, gained about 30 pounds in 6 months. That's how it goes. And was really lucky because the medicine that the doctors put me on right away worked pretty fast. I didn't have to go through a bunch of different types of medication and try them out. So they got the Crohn's under control. I suffered from migraines starting in like early elementary school, so before the Crohn's set on, and missed a lot of class for that. Would have to go to the doctor and get sent home, or to the nurse's office and get sent home. And so then from probably 12 or 13 until I was 24, 25, my Crohn's was pretty well managed. I would have flares every once in a while, and have to go on steroid bursts for that, occasionally mess with how often I got my infusion, different things like that, but it was pretty minor. And then at age, this was 2.5 years ago, so I think I was 24, I started having extreme chest pain, and was keeping my husband up at night. I was sleeping in a recliner in the living room, couldn't deal with it. My doctor put me on opioids, was taking Oxy every 3 or 4 hours, trying to deal with the pain. And finally, after an ER visit, figured out that my aorta was inflamed, and then got taken off the medication I was on for my Crohn's because they thought that caused it, and then my Crohn's flared, and then whatever. Finally, after about a year, we figured out something that worked for both, and now both are well managed. And so that's kind of a history of my health experience. In that time, when I was a sophomore in high school, I started going out to a high school Bible study through this church with a couple of my friends from school, and found a community there that was different than what I had experienced anywhere else. And that's where I decided to put my trust into Christ as my Savior and ask for his death to pay for my sins and what I had done wrong. And I wish I had a clear contrast of dealing with chronic illness before I knew Christ and after. But because I was so young when I was diagnosed, I've kind of always lived my life like this is just how it is. And so it wasn't until later, and really with the second diagnosis, that I begun dealing with some of the stuff that we're going to talk about tonight. So that's just a little bit of my history while we get into this. And the way that we thought we would discuss living with chronic illness or pain or disability, whatever it is that you're experiencing, is as we were talking about our experiences, we realized that there's a lot of really common lies that God's enemy, Satan, will throw your way in relation to whatever issues you're having. And so we narrowed down four that we thought were kind of the main ones that we've experienced and we've shared throughout our experiences. And just wanted to talk through those, some verses that have helped. But then obviously there's a lot more than just what we are going to talk about. So if you have other thoughts or lies or anything like that afterwards, we want to be able to discuss that too. So our first lie that we thought of was that God has not been through this, and so he cannot understand it. So I don't know if you want to talk about that verse.
Yeah, so I think this is a pretty common thing that I know I felt. I know I remember in the hospital, I especially felt, you know, very discouraged and even suicidal. They just, you know, I went on a hunger strike and they just hooked up an IV. You know, you can't really starve yourself in the hospital. But yeah, I was very mad at God, and I remember telling my dad that I didn't believe that he or wasn't even what that he was around, and and things like that. And I think that's pretty common, you know, people who are in really hard situations or are angry with God, they'll think these kind of thoughts. But we know that, you know, verses like this one right here, that he has experienced, you know, things that maybe we're not aware of. And one way that kind of brought it home to me was reading in Johnny Erickson's book. She said, you know, like when Christ was on the cross, in a sense, he was paralyzed. And that just, you know, whether that was true or not, but that really resonated in with me, since I'm paralyzed and partially, and that was enough. That, you know, that convinced me that you know he cares and he knows what I'm going through.
There's a verse that really struck me in this sense. That's Hebrews 4:14-16. It says, therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith that we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weakness, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet did not sin. Let us approach God, then, God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. And I think that's really helpful. Similar to what Greg was saying, it's really difficult, I think, when you suffer from something that is very unique to you, because as humans, we want acceptance. We want people to understand us fully. We want them to get it. We want other people to understand the struggle that we're going through, and other people can't. I mean, even if one of you here has Crohn's or vasculitis or is paralyzed, you don't understand the same as we do, and we don't understand the same as you do. But it's only God who can understand that pain fully. And I think that is something that really helped me eventually, was realizing, all right, God, I need to connect to you because you're the only one who can understand this. No matter how much I try to seek that out from other people, no matter how much I try to explain it, no matter how much I try to write it down, it won't ever be able to fully make sense to another human being. But God gets it and even understands all the pain that we will go through in the future. So I think that really contradicts this lie that God can't help because he hasn't been through it, because really he's been through it to our degree and worse.
Yeah.
So.
It's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So our next kind of lie that we pinpointed is, what would God be able to do with you? And so this was your verse.
That's right. So, and this was another misconception that I had when I was first paralyzed. I had a lot of misconceptions about what it would mean to live in a wheelchair. I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life in a bed and, you know, people taking care of me, and I had no vision. But the book by Johnny Erickson Tata, she talked a lot about that God can use anybody, no matter, you know, what their condition, for his purposes. And it was just a real eye-opening experience that gave me hope. And I've seen it, you know, happen. God has changed me over the years, and there was a lot of people in that first home group that I was in that really loved me into his kingdom. And many of them are still around in our church. I guess I'm just trying to say that, you know, no matter It might take a while depending on how much you let God work in your life. His timing is everything, but he can take even the most resistant or untalented person and use him for mighty things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the verses that we came up with for this kind of were similar. There's 2 Corinthians 12:9, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness, so that Christ's power may rest on me." And then Philippians 4:13, "I can do all things through him who strengthens me." And I think a lot of times we view our limitations and we actually think that those are bigger than God's power. And we think, I can't sleep, I'm in pain all the time, I'm having a flare, I can't X, Y, Z, can't. And we oftentimes think that those limitations are actually bigger than God's power. But if we see here and remember from math, they're less than God's power. And so I think it's really a lot of times an excuse to not do things that God is calling us to. Because we think someone else could do this better, or this is my time to rest, or I've done what I could do. But when we look at Paul, I think he's really convicting to look at his life, because, well, one, we hear in prison, he still served, he wrote half the New Testament. But also, when you look at the pain that he endured, he didn't stop when he was in pain and wait for it to get better. He pushed through. He got, flogged, thrown out of city, and then went back in, probably back still bleeding. And so I think there's this, mindset. There's a long time where I had this mindset of, people don't get it, and I just need to take a break from everything until it gets better. But when you're living with chronic illness or chronic pain or chronic disability, there's a very good chance that it will never get better. And I realized at one point that is something that I can either wallow in and think, all right, I can't do these things. Why can't I do these things? Versus just being able to claim life as it is and take the opportunities that God gives us and really push through. And it looks different maybe than what other people do. But I think the more we focus on what we can't do, we really limit the things that God does want to do. And I put get creative on here because I think it does involve a lot of creativity. One thing I do, so I get infusions now every 5 weeks, and I just started getting rapid infusions, which is 1 hour. But before they took between 2 and 3 hours, they've gone down in time. But something I'll do is bring girls who are in my home church with me to my infusion. And it's not fun because I'm sitting there hooked up to an IV. But it's a way for them to really get involved in my life, and we can hang out. Makes it less boring for me. So that was a creative way that I thought of that you can use, in my case, infusions. But we can use our chronic it is that we have to actually get in with other people.
Yeah, I really don't know where I would be if I wouldn't have been put in a wheelchair. I think I'd be I just don't know. It's been a very positive experience with God, and I can't express enough gratitude that he's allowed me to have this life that I have.
That's awesome. Yes, so what would God be able to do with you? A lot, as we can see. The third lie that we pinpointed is that other people haven't been through the same thing as you, so they don't care. And so we had two verses that came to mind. The first is 1 Corinthians 10:13. I'm just going to go ahead and read them both, and then we can talk. Okay.
Yeah.
The temptations in your life are no different from what others experience, and God is faithful. He will not allow the temptation to be more than what you can stand. When you are tempted, he will show you a way out so you can endure. And then in Romans 12:15, Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. And Galatians 6:2, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ.
Right, so with that, you know, those kind of verses have always touched my heart from early on. And I've got to say that, you know, anything God's been able to do in my life, it's been because of the people that he has placed in my life. Encouraging, serving, just helping me overcome times of difficulty. It's definitely, you know, his power through God's people that has made all the difference in the world. You know, it's just, you can't describe it, but you can definitely experience it.
I think it's easy, I found, to think, just think about the differences and what I'm capable of versus someone else, and kind of feeling bad about what I can't do or comparing self. But I think a lot of what this mindset does of, like, other people haven't been through this and they don't really care, so I either need to keep it to myself or not let them in. It really, eventually, it's just continued focus on self when we're just thinking about the things I can't do or what my pain is or what my whatever is. And then, again, when we look at the life of Paul, it doesn't say the call isn't to be outward focused as long as nothing is going on in your own life. The call is to be outward focused, period. We're supposed to love other people, to serve other people, and let other people love and serve us. And so I think that's a big, it can sound kind of harsh, but it's during our times of pain, if we can step outside of that and still love and serve others, there's a big impact in that, as well as letting people in to experience the pain that we have, and not keeping them at arm's length. So, yeah, I think really letting people in. And then finally, suffering in the hands of God doesn't have a purpose. So, do you want to go ahead and read that one?
Yeah, I love this verse. It says, the foolish plan of God is wiser than the wisest of human plans, and God's weakness is stronger than the greatest of human strength. Remember, dear brothers and sisters, that few of you were wise in the world's eyes, or powerful, or wealthy, when God called you. Instead, God chose things this world considers foolish in order to shame those who think they are wise, and he chose things that are powerless to shame those who are powerful. God chose things despised by the world, things counted as nothing at all, and used them to bring to nothing what the world considers important. As a result, no one can ever boast in the presence of God. So I just love that. I've always been a very proudful person, and so it's definitely a essential part of my Christian walk to be somewhat powerless, you know, because I would try to take all the credit. But God's design is the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot of purpose in suffering in terms of showing us our humility. I know one thing I've had trouble with is thinking, like, is everything just going to keep going bad because of my illnesses and medicine? My husband and I have actually had trouble with being able to have kids, and that's added a whole other layer of things into the suffering that happens through the illness. And I think during that, it's so easy to get focused in and think, well, why don't I just stop, like, trying to live for God, or why don't I give up on this whole thing if it's just going to keep being suffering, if we're not focusing on the purpose. And I remember seeing my counselor, and She said, you know what? What if it doesn't ever get better? So what? You get to be a player in the grand scope of God's plan. And I just remember like feeling like smacked in the face with a brick wall. It's like, even if things don't get better, even if our life is full of suffering, someday we get to be in presence with God. If we have that relationship with him, we get to spend an eternity in perfection. And despite having light and momentary afflictions here, even though they feel like an eternity, they are going to pass. And being able to focus on that bigger picture is so helpful in getting through what feels like an eon day to day. And something else we both wanted to throw into is that during a life of chronic pain, illness, disability, it's normal to get angry with God at times. I think it's easy to think, I'm a Christian, I shouldn't ever get mad at God, I should be kind of la-di-da all the time. But I think it's normal to feel that and for that to resurge every once in a while. And addressing that anger and actually working through it with God is really important. Because if we just suppress it, then it doesn't go anywhere from there. And it doesn't actually, we can't actually grow through it.
Right. And you might have heard before, and I truly believe that, you know, he's never surprised by our anger. He uses, you know, all our emotions to help change us and work on our own characters, because he's definitely into character development. I have one quote I want to read from this book that probably many of you have read. It's called Choosing Gratitude by Nancy Lee DeMoss. But she makes one point in here that I thought was really good. She says, I want to suggest that as challenging as your situation or your season of life may be, your frame of mind likely has less to do with your distressing circumstances than with your need to develop a thankful heart. And so I think that's really true. Thankfulness and gratitude go a long way in whatever situation you're in. And I think, you know, there's another quote out there that, change any circumstance you're in. Just how you view it, if you have hope, and as long as you're in Christ with God, you always have hope. There's never something that some situation that you can't have some hope when you're with God.
Yeah. Yep. So that was what we had like scheduled in terms of what we wanted to say. We wanted to leave a lot of time for experiences, comments, and questions. We didn't know if anyone was going to classes after this. So we have a couple mics if people want to say anything. Go ahead in the middle.
I live in chronic pain, and so some days are better than others. And, you know, I can go about my life and, you know, have hope and do things. But I'm often reminded, as I was today, just it can get really bad. And I get despondent. And I just, if you could address that. And then also, I'm so unreliable. How do I do ministry? I don't know when, you know, it's going to take me down. And so I've shied away from ministry. Can you address that?
Yeah. So two parts. One, kind of bad days and what to do with those. And then also how to deal with commitment when we don't know what we're going to be able to do. Yeah.
A couple thoughts that popped in my head. Was one is that God is with us for the long haul. And a lot of times, things, you know, it's hard to feel encouraged by words when you're really in pain. I remember when I was still very depressed after my accident, a lot of people told me, you know, one day, Greg, God's going to do mighty things through you. And I didn't really know what to think about that, or it was hard to believe at the time. But yeah, he's with us for the long haul, and there's always a brighter day right around the corner. The other thing I thought of was, I mean, the example that, you know, you think about, I don't know, do you know Johnny Erickson Tana? I mean, she's done unbelievable things with God in her life. And she wrote about a person that inspired her when she was in a nursing home. And it was like, I think she was a woman with maybe like a degenerative nerve disease who couldn't move, couldn't talk. All she could do was hum. But it was like enough. It inspired Johnny to like have hope and to keep going. And so you never know what little contribution you make, you know, might turn out to, you know, inspire the next Billy Graham or, you know, Johnny, or, you know, it's just that kind of thing. Your willingness in God's hands can accomplish anything. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think for the first on days where things hit and you're like, everything's been going well for a few weeks, and then now it's like, oh my gosh, the world feels like it's coming in. I think there's a couple things. One is knowing what you do need and knowing that that is okay to take. Like I remember when the vasculitis was flaring and I had a lot of chest pain, there was times where I just had to lay down. I couldn't do anything else. And so not ignoring like literal physical needs that you have during that. And then I think past that, and also in with your second question, figuring out, okay, when something is flaring, in whatever sense that means, what can I do? And so that looks different. Like there's times where my Crohn's will flare, and I'm meeting with one of the girls that I study the Bible with, and I'm like, well, I gotta go to the bathroom for a while now. So you can sit outside the bathroom if you want, and we can keep talking, or you can read your Bible out in the living room, and I'll be back. And that, I think, depends from illness to illness or pain to pain because it's so different. Something that I do with all the girls that I study with is I just tell them, like, you know, there's going to be seasons where I'm doing fine and we can do normal times every week and read and it'll be okay. But there's other times where I'll need you to read to me and I'll need to lay there, but we can still discuss what we're learning. And so I think it depends on what type of ministry you're wanting to get involved in. If it's something like that, then you can be flexible with maybe the way it happens. If it's, you know, do I want to commit to teaching something like this every week? I don't know if I'd be able to do that. Maybe not, you know. So I think it depends. I actually, one of the girls that I used to study the Bible with gets chronic migraines, and she just would progressively push herself. And she'd get them like multiple times a week. And she would just progressively push herself to see what she could do and when it was too much. And so on nights where she had them, sometimes she'd come, sit in the teaching, and then she would take one person and go upstairs and talk with them. So she's still there, she's still interacting, because she knew it was bad for her to just sit alone. So I think it's just trial and error, kind of figuring out where the limits can be pushed, instead of just assuming that they can't be. I think that's the best mindset. That was a long answer, I apologize. Josh? Or actually, we'll do Josh next.
Just a quick thing. I was recently diagnosed with degenerative disc disease, and it's a pain in my neck, not to be a bad pun or anything, but how do you deal with anybody, really? Chronic pain, illness, when you're pissed at God because I'm too young for this. I have so much to do. Like, what's going on? You know, do you have scripture or thoughts about that? I'm sure it's, I'm not unique in this.
Yeah.
Scripture I can't think of at the moment. But I think, you know, just having an open mind, there may not be an answer right away. I guess another big area that I think God works in us through suffering is patience. And I know that's not a helpful answer maybe at the time, but that's kind of how it worked with me. Is, you know, it's taken time for me to see a lot of different things happen that maybe I expected sooner. Cap back here.
Yeah, I was not going to say anything, but I am listening to you here, and I've got a couple of chronic pain things. I'm not as young as you, but I've been nixed from having to do a lot of stuff I love, and there's a lot of times I'm like, okay, should I go out tonight or not? And one, about the resting, I'll be like, you know, if I'm just circling the wagons and I'm bummed out, the rest is not very fun. But if I'm like, I need to rest, God's saying rest, then it's fine. It's good, you know. But on the other thing, like, there are so many promises in Scripture that no suffering, if you include God in your suffering, it's never a waste. And I used to think, well, it has to be for Jesus, like I'm dying for Christ. No, I studied that heartily. Anytime you invite God into the situation, it's not pointless. And so then, instead of pain being something that you've just got to grit your teeth and try not to be mad about, it becomes a stewardship, almost like, Greg, you know, I can't believe you're up there saying, I'm glad God put me in a wheelchair. But in a much lesser way, I've been glad, like, then you get kind of a vision, because God, like, nothing's an accident if you invite the Lord into it. So it's something God's saying, this is a way I've given you in your life to proclaim my goodness as a Christian. And for those who aren't Christians and for those who are, this world isn't the end of the story. You know, this world is broken and God knows it. But one day, if we've invited him into our lives, we are going to be whole and running. And so I wanted to put that in there too. But
yeah. Yeah, I get the anger and the I'm too young for this. I think something that, something that really helped me is knowing I can be angry at God and he wants to hear that. I read through the Psalms a lot, and looking back at my prayer journal from 2017 when I was in the hospital with the chest stuff, some of the days were just literally like, why are you doing this? And I think knowing that that's, you don't want to get stuck there and stay there, but knowing that it's okay to actually work through that is helpful. And I think the just the thinking about, like, okay, this sucks right now, but I can be angry and sad, or I can make a difference in this world, knowing that when I get to heaven, I can do everything that I'm missing out on now better. Like, yes, I had to quit whatever thing I had to quit now, but when I get to heaven, I'll get to do that with a perfect body, with all my friends, and, like, with God on my team. So I think looking forward to that can help a lot, too.
Yeah, one little story that I heard recently encouraged me was it's a young boy in England that he was like 13 when he talked to this one guy, and he had spent most of his first 13 years in the hospital, and the guy asked him if he thought that was fair, and the kid, he said, Yeah, it's fair. God's going to make it all up to me in heaven. And he was convinced of that. So I thought that was a good perspective to have.
Yeah. All right, we'll do Josh, and then we have time for some over there after that.
I was just going to say, in some of the difficulty that I've had, there's been like pain, but along with the pain comes a weird like cognitive effect. So like I can't remember things or like think clearly or feel emotionally and stuff that comes along with it. And I don't know, when like difficult things would happen in the past, and then it'd be like, well, it's a broken world, but God's going to make it right someday. I didn't feel super comforted by that because I was like, man, it's a long time, I think, probably, until I get to experience that. And for these whatever decades of time, you know, having to deal with this, what about that period of time? And Psalm 27, 13 through 14 was really nice. So what that lady was saying there earlier on, how do you fight against despair? That was a really sweet couple verses. It says, I would have despaired unless I believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's such a, when you're in a difficult situation where it's like, either they've said, this is what it is, and it's going to be indefinite, or you're going in for some issue, and no specialist or doctor or anything can figure out what's wrong with you, then it gets frustrating because you fall into that, how long is this going to last? And then it's just like you're looking down the road at something that could be indefinitely there. Then it's really discouraging because then you start to think, well, my life was, I was a Christian before I had any of this kind of stuff happen. But it's tempting to look back on the past and think, well, that was when my life was really good. It was nice to not have to deal with this, that, and the other thing. But to remember what that psalmist said there, where he's like, the thing that helps me fight against despair as I come up against the brokenness of the world and stuff like that, is remembering that God's plan is still good for me in this world. Mm-hmm. Like, his plan is still good. And when it comes to pouring out good things, he's not a chintzy pourer either. Like, he loves to pour out great, magnificent blessings, and he's not tight-fisted. And so that's helpful to me sometimes.
Yeah, I like that a lot, and I think it is easy to focus on the negative. Why do I have this? Why is this happening? When will it end? But when we can take our eyes off of that, and I mean, even thinking of this book, Choosing Gratitude, one of the things she has you do in the activity at the end is like thanking God for as many things as you can, and we lose sight of those things when we get so focused in on our pain or our illness, but thinking about the blessings that God's given us now and that we'll get to experience in the future can really help take our minds off of that. The lady I used to nanny for asked me this thing once. She was like, if you only had the things today that you thanked God for yesterday, what would you have? And I was like, oh, not a lot of stuff. But yeah, we lose sight of that when we get too focused in on what's wrong. Yeah. All right, back here.
A metaphor that just seems to make a lot of sense to me is the metaphor of having a certain number of spoons every day. And in the morning when you get up and you take your shower, you're using a spoon. Getting dressed, you're using a spoon. When you got to put that shoe on, you know, you're using a spoon. When you're getting in the car, and you have a certain number of spoons, and every day that number of spoons is different. And you don't know what you can eat today. And sometimes you eat a little bit extra today and you pay for it tomorrow. But there's this, the idea of, you know, God, I don't know what I can do today. If I can be there, I'll be there. If I can participate, I'll participate. But I may not be able to. But sometimes trying to figure out, okay, well, when does your spoon run out? You know, maybe your spoon runs out at 7:30, but you can get together with somebody at 5 and go out and have dinner. You know, it's that kind of a thing. Trying to figure out how to use the spoons that you have, and then using, you know, your medication as well as you possibly can, to have the time when you're okay, when you can be with somebody else.
Yeah.
And at least then you have the option of, you know, interacting in somebody else's life.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that, having the mindset of, I'm going to assume that I can do everything. And then if I need to, I won't. But moving out with the assumption of, all right, I'm going to try and push the boundaries today. Yeah. All right, we'll do one last one, and then we'll pray. But then we'll still be here so you can linger and mingle and whatever else. So we'll do Lacey.
So under the second lie, you guys had mentioned that people can tend to use their chronic illnesses as, like, an excuse to not do anything because you just feel like God can't use you. So I was wondering what advice you had for someone that swings more on the opposite side, that's like, okay, like, I need to do all of these things like I did before I got sick. And, like, I see myself, I tend to, like, push those boundaries too much, and then I regret it, like, 3 days later when I have a really bad flare-up. But also in the moment, it's hard to decide, well, am I being selfish or am I having good stewardship? I don't really know.
Yeah.
So, like, what advice would you give to figure that out?
Yeah. I think similar to the other side of things, trial and error. You know, it's like, mentally, if you know, if the last time I did this, I paid for it a couple of days later and it made me less effective. It's like, we want to maximize our effectiveness for God. And so if pushing through for one activity today means I'm taken out for a whole day in 3 days, then is it worth it for one activity when that's then making a whole day null and void? And I think it's difficult because since illness is so different person to person, it's just really trial and error as we learn from those experiences. I had to learn how to say no to a lot of things when just going through different flares and illnesses and all that type of stuff. And it felt guilty about it at first. And then I realized during that time I could pray for people. Or then when I was actually doing things, I was more effective. And so I think looking at it in that light can help. If you have like a, if your conscience feels weird about saying no and not pushing, I think thinking about what's most effective with our time is a good way to answer that.
Yeah, and I think you know, it's opportunity a lot of times. Maybe we will fail in those kind of, you know. With those attitudes or circumstances, but always knowing that God is gracious and merciful, get us through. We can always learn more about His grace.
Yeah, so if you guys want to close this up.
Thank you.
You want to pray first, or me too? Okay. Well, Lord, thank you that you are not alien to our trials that we have here on earth. And with illness and pain and disability, we can feel very lonely. And like, there's no one who can understand it, but thank you that you understand it even better than we can understand it about ourselves. And I really pray for everyone in this room that you would show us all how we can be the most effective in our lives. That's what we want to do. We want to impact your kingdom out of gratitude for the grace and blessing that you've given us in our lives. And so I really pray for restoration physically, if that is within your will. And if not, then I pray for emotional and spiritual healing so that we can serve you to the best of our ability. And thank you that when we get to heaven someday, there will be no more tears, no more sorrow, no more pain, and that we can look forward to that every day while we're here.
Yes, Father, you say that no ear has heard, no eye has seen, no mind has comprehended the wonderful things that you have in store for us. And I believe that, Lord. I thank you that you've let me experience your spirit in my life, and that you make that available to all of us through Christ. And I just ask that anyone here who's come with pain, or anyone who has, well, I guess it's not a question of if, but when. We all have pain, whether it be severe or chronic or just regular daily aches and pains. I ask that you come alongside them with your comfort, your love, and especially your wisdom. You say also that anyone who lacks wisdom just needs to ask, and you supply that without any doubt. So we just love you, Lord, and ask that you'd bless the rest of this night. Mm-hmm. Amen.
Amen.